Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. Well, Cycling Chicks is a global community of women who are passionate about cycling and celebrating the ride with friends. They claim to be the happiest peeps, get it? Peeps, chicks, on the planet because we are riding with their sisters, and that is their happy place. Joining us in the studio now is Debbie Drain, who founded the group, and she's going to tell us about all the things that they've been doing around the world, including establishing an online boutique and partnering with a coffee roaster to bring us that coffee we like to drink before and after the ride. So, Debbie, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I can't remember when the last time that we talked to you was, but you certainly weren't doing an online shop. You had just, I think, established your first piece of jewelry, and now you're selling jewelry on this cyclingchicksboutique.com, I think it's called. Yes.
Yep.
Cyclingchicksboutique.com.
Yes, that's correct. Good memory. We have been very busy, and just to kind of revisit, the jewelry was an inspiration from my son in the Park City High School jewelry class that he created for me for Mother's Day. And we have gone well beyond that. We have multiple pieces from earrings to necklaces to bracelets. And we have also created an apparel line that the chicks are liking to wear around the world. And part of the around the world part that's fun is we're trying to connect women through cycling and the cycling clubs that are sprouting up all over the world. And no matter what kind of bike you ride, you are a cycling chick, whether you're on a cruiser bike going to the farmer's market or you are climbing Alpe d'Huez, you know, in France. And so I've met through social media a number of groups around the world, and they have invited us to come and experience their club.
Wow. So I was going to ask, what if you are on an e-bike? Does that count as well?
Oh, totally. Totally counts. And e-bikes are underrated, but I don't think for too much longer. We had a chance to ride them in Provence, and oh my gosh, was it fun cruising up and down these hills. And we were allowed to shop at the same time. And chicks love to bike and shop and do it all. And so we had a pretty fun year connecting with some Belgian riding groups and participating in their fundraising event of the year, Grand Fondo. And it was just so cute how they welcomed, they felt we're international now because the American cycling chicks are in the house, which was really, really fun. And so we're hoping maybe they'll come here and discover Park City. But
so wait just a second. So yeah. So you founded Cycling Chicks here,
yeah.
But and so when you say you're partnering with other clubs, they're not cycling chicks necessarily. They're just other clubs that involve women in cycling.
Yes, yes, and no. We're hoping that down the road they want to put our little chick on their clothing and whatnot, because we want it to be a global, universal symbol for connecting women and their passion for their sport, and it happens to be cycling with the cycling chick. But as we're seeing cycling chicks, I'm discovering as we are here in Park City, we love skiing, we love yoga, we love running, we love surfing, we love everything. And so that's what kind of created this other product line for us of the coffee line. Because what I discovered is I've been very fortunate that my cycling chick girlfriends and I sit down over a cup of coffee and we kind of mapped out how often we were going to meet, what events we were going to do, and how we were going to support and empower and encourage each other to make these events and do these accomplishments and get you out on that day when you don't want to get out and ride your bike, which is very rare. Or change it up, you know, hey, let's do something different. And so it started over a cup of coffee. So we hatched this idea and we pitched it. And Park City Coffee Roasters, Rob and Ray Hibble, they jumped right on board and said, hey, we want to help you with this. And so they are our master roasters. And we collaborate and we work together. And the fun backstory to the Coffee Chicks blends is that we are really trying to work through an importer that helps us with our vision of empowering women all along the way. So we try to source our beans from farms that empower women, either through ownership, education, employment opportunities. And then, this is the other cool thing about Park City, is we wanted the women of Park City to participate in this. So we made multiple sample blends, and then we invited the women of Park City to come and vote, taste them, sample A, sample B. So the women of Park City chose the Skier Chick blend, which will be launched tomorrow.
And is your son still, I don't want to lose track of what's happening tomorrow. We'll get right back to that. But yeah. I have to ask about your son and the jewelry. You said you've expanded the offerings. So is he still designing, or have you moved to other designers? And what, are you just broadening that out in general?
Well, that's a great question. So he is a very busy University of Utah accounting student. So one day I hope he comes back and does my books for me. But what we've done is his main piece is his design. And so we've tweaked that in different sizes and modalities and whatnot offerings in the wheel. So that's the signature Cycling Chicks wheel. But then yours truly drew the chick, which has two of the wheels, and the chick's on a bike. But down the road...
Wait, you drew that?
I did.
Because I was going to ask who your graphic designer was, because I think this is brilliant. The little pink chick on top of a bike. Are you a graphic designer by trade?
Oh, gosh, no.
Wow.
But thank you. Because
you found
this,
your calling.
Well, this proves to people you can learn and do anything that you put your mind to. And so I just started playing around with it because my mind goes a mile a minute and I wanted to make a lot of changes. But I really wanted this chick to be inviting and encouraging, and for all spectrums of riders, not just, you know, beginners or hardcore. I wanted it to be very inclusive. So I'm glad you like it. I also really like to collaborate with people, and I've got a couple of artists. I like to collaborate with those people that get the vision and the excitement and craziness. And so I've got a couple of artists that are interested. We are going to be working on a Surfer Chick jewelry piece and a Yoga Chick jewelry piece for 2018. So stay tuned for that. You know, follow us on Facebook, get on our newsletter, then you'll be in the know on kind of what's coming, because we have a lot of good things coming in 2018.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, because that's a little heads up to what I was going to segue into, which you said you've expanded into coffee, and that sort of organically grew out of these meetings and discussions and strategizing, mapping a future vision. And here you are just letting us know that you're going to have jewelry that sets a map for other sort of apparel,
yeah.
I would think. I mean, yeah. Surfer apparel, yoga apparel, maybe even cross-country ski apparel. That
yeah.
The cap I'm wearing right now would be very appropriate for going around the Nordic track.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the plan, to
it
take
is.
Little steps and move yeah. in that direction.
Yes, because this really is my self-inflicted MBA over half a century. And so I'm navigating by my chick friends and, you know, just resources and having a lot of fun with it and hoping to demonstrate that, my gosh, if I can do it, you know, follow your dreams, throw it out there, try it. You know?
Has it been stressful or, I mean... So in a normal business growth cycle, there's periods of ups and downs, stress, financial constraints and concerns. Are you experiencing any of that, or are you taking it at such a pace through a 50-year MBA self-imposed program with a lot of support from friends?
And family.
And maybe there's not a tremendous financial commitment. Maybe there is. I don't know. But is it manageable, and has it created stress, or has it been expansive?
Well, I have a really, really dear husband who is supporting me all the way, and a wonderful family who also is supporting me, and lots of friends that are chipping in here and there to provide services and work with me.
And a son who designs.
And a son who designs, who has left right brain because he's also accounting.
Yeah.
But I, you know, when it does get stressful like that, I tap into my yoga chick and I do a lot of deep breathing.
And say namaste.
Namaste. Yeah. And I'm really trying to embrace the journey because that's where my creative flow comes from. And if I'm really, really stressed out, the ideas and the pathways and the collaboration doesn't happen. So I'm always looking for investors. So if anyone is out there and would like to partner, that would be fantastic. But we are just, you know, taking a methodical approach and allowing it to organically just percolate. And I'm sure we'll get to those places and we'll have to remind ourselves to take a deep breath and, you know.
Is there ever a thought about, well, you've heard people in Park City say this, the last thing I need is another sport as they're embarking on another sport, right? Because it's just kind of what we love to do here. And I see you expanding from cycling into skiing and surfing and yoga, at least with your apparel and your brand. Yeah. I don't know if you're planning on, you know, courses or doing, as you say, going into groups, you know, girl surfer groups and helping them with fundraising. You know, at what point do you say, okay, we just want to do one thing really well?
That's a great question. So I think how I want to answer that question is I've learned that. I tried to run the group. And you're right. You can only do so much and you spread too thin. So this art of collaboration is awesome. And so I'll give you an example. For the cycling part, we collaborate with Jan's White Pine. And their Monday night road ride was needing some love in riding chicks and members. And so I collaborate with Carolyn and Karen, who run that program for them, and said, hey, if you run the program on Monday nights, I'll try to bring the chicks. And so that's kind of how we're doing it, in the sense that it's more a brand that supports the activities and the paths that you're going down. So it's for you to wear and celebrate that you're a skier chick.
Mm.
And hopefully that inspires other women to jump in and, you know, try skiing. And it doesn't mean you have to be at this level that participates in this club. It's whatever level you're at. It's having a cup of coffee with your girlfriend or girlfriends and saying, hey, let's try skiing, or let's try paddleboarding, or let's try, you know, yoga, or let's go to a yoga retreat, whatever that is. It's more about that. You're wearing your passion.
Right.
And hopefully you're encouraging others to jump out and try an activity. We need to keep searching out and growing and learning and trying, and at all ages, you know, and you never know where that's going to take you, but it's very empowering to stand up on a paddleboard and you never have. And then that takes you back to your home life, and hopefully that spills over in a really positive, encouraging way. And that's, I hope that makes sense. So, you know, that's kind of what
absolutely
it's about.
Lynn, I'm looking at the apparel online, and I would suggest that listeners do the same. We've talked to different groups that have different outfits that are very popular, and I can imagine how popular these are. And, you know, there's something inspiring about new equipment, new gear, new clothing. And just looking at this, I would imagine you get a lot of positive feedback from people, and they're excited to wear your cycling apparel and get out there and, as you say, present as a cycling chick and be part of something that, and this recognizes them as part of something. And you've got some pictures in places where you've done exactly that.
Thank you. And the fun part about each one of these kits, everything is created from our hearts and our passion. And so, you know, we started with some high vis kits, mm-hmm, because women on the road bike need to be seen, but we wanted it to be stylish and fun. So we found an Italian manufacturer that would collaborate with us. Well, then we set a goal and we said, you know what? We want our own brand. We don't want another name on there. We want our own brand. So we found another great Italian manufacturer, and they helped us with our hint of pink. So for the woman that wants a little more subtle statement. Mm-hmm. And then we went with testing another Italian manufacturer, and we wanted I wanted a kit that when you saw it going down the road, it was a breath of fresh air, and you felt very, on a hot day, like you were, you know, relaxing in Hawaii and not climbing up, you know, Wolf Creek Pass or something. And so that's
what's
the
not relaxing about that.
And that's the Mahalo kit, you know, and maybe somebody rides past you and says Mahalo, you know, I don't know. So we've got some really cool designs coming forward in 2018 with this one manufacturer that we really, really love in Italy. And so we're trying to produce high quality, but really mindful, purposeful.
Is the Italian manufacturer, you keep saying, but you haven't mentioned the brand, is it a household name?
No.
No.
No. So this is, I met with them when I was in Europe, and this is a private label. And they make some pretty large brands that you would recognize. For example, Rafa is one that they make. So I'm thrilled that I had to go there and really tell my story about the cycling chick, and they fell in love with the chicks. And so they're willing to work with this smaller boutique brand. And, you know, so we hope you all tune in and go to the page, and we run deals and get on the newsletter and find out what's going on. And
so, we will get back to the December 7th thing,
oh, yeah.
But I still have some questions for you. Mm-hmm. This self-imposed 50-year MBA, I just love because it's a paradigm that you could apply to many different women who have, during their lives, stayed at home to raise their children. And I assume, or maybe I'm guessing, that you did that at least in part. And so you get to this point in your life where it's time to reinvent yourself. And I love to hear these stories. And so from the business model, the business plan, and that's even a question for you, because it sounds like this is evolving organically. Like Tim said, you know, did you have a business plan? How did you come about creating this really pretty nice website? You know, this must have been all on this steep learning curve for you. So you talked about it a few minutes ago, but could you expand on that?
Yes. Those are great questions. And I love that too, hearing these stories about men and women that have, you know, I was in the workplace. I have a degree, and I was out in the professional world for many years. And then my husband and I, we had these three beautiful boys, and we decided to take a leap of faith. And if we had to eat peanut butter jelly every day, we would, for me to stay home. And so, you know, I did that for many years and totally loved it. And, you know, in a way, I'm kind of sad to see that go, but the boys are doing great, and they're adults now. And I have this passion for learning. And I have this passion for learning sports, activities, and educating myself in different areas. And it is really fun, and I encourage women to do that. I mean, I have had kind of sideline jobs working for my brother, and the joke in our family is I'm an idea minute gal. And when the sparkler idea fizzles out, then I need to move on. And this one has never fizzled out. And so, yes, a steep learning curve. But there, with the internet, there are so many resources. So, for example, you say the website. I designed the website. I hired someone to design a website for me to learn. And then I decided I changed things too often, because I'm still creating, that I needed a platform that I could do it on.
That was flexible.
And so I researched and found a platform that I can go in and change on a minute's notice. But I think that's the way with most things. There are so many resources out there. There's classes. There's people that want to help take you to the next level. The business plan, that is a challenge for me. And I have a wonderful board of advisors that are helping me shape that and keep my balloons from floating off into the air. You know, they keep me on the straight and narrow, and they're helping me with the business and marketing plan.
Excellent.
But to not fizzle out, I mean, that's fabulous. And it's wonderful that you're connected to something that's captivated and still energizes you. And what about tomorrow? You need to tell us what's happening with the
event. Yes. So tomorrow from 7:30 to noon at the Park City Coffee Roasters location in Kimball Junction in the back tasting room, we are going to be launching. We'll have a tasting of the Skier Chick, our newest blend. And we, if you buy, our promotion deal is if you buy a bag of beans or ground of any of our four blends, then you can choose a free mug, any one of the four mugs. And then we will also have our newly released Skier Chick apparel. Some of it will be on a discount to get it going, and some will be regular price. So come on down and try it on, check it out, see what's new.
Excellent. Again, 7:30 a.m. to noon at the Kimball Junction location of the Park City Coffee Roasters. And Debbie Drain joins us, the founder of Cycling Chicks, Surfing Chicks, Yoga Chicks, and Skiing Chicks.
And maybe Running Chicks soon.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck with your business.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back after this. We're going to talk about the seven pillars of wellness when we return. It's The Mountain Life.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Programming for KPCW is sponsored in part by Mark Wangsgard and Jim Doylney of Retail at New Park, part of the development team of New Park Town Center and co-owners of the New Park Sun Plaza, location of many Park City community events.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. We were just speaking with Debbie Drain of Cycling Chicks and CyclingChicksBoutique.com. Well, the seven pillars or dimensions of wellness best serve us when we bring them into all facets of our life, to our workplace, our family life, our financial well-being. Those seven pillars are, of course, social, community, physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, and environmental wellness. Our next guests, one a financial advisor, the other an athletic trainer, have partnered to bring their clients into alignment with these principles. We're joined by Fausto Rodriguez, a trainer here in Park City, and Bruce Greenwald of the 1-7 Financial Advising Group. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, Lynn. How are you today?
Great.
Good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. So, Fausto, why don't we start quickly with you to give us a little background about your athletic training here in Park City.
Pretty much. I've been in Park City for 3 years now, and I work in some different clubs, like Silver Mountain. I work in Promontory, Glenwild, and I work in mountaintop physical therapy. So, you know, the main idea is just to keep everybody healthy and happy and just enjoying the outdoors.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I've been doing for the last 3 years. I do a lot of work with kids. So teaching them swimming, water polo, biking, all this. And I have the honor to work with Bruce.
I have the honor to work with you. You are the best trainer I've ever had.
Thank you.
So, Bruce, you have brought Fausto in to work with you. When you deal with your clients in financial advising, now this seems like, you know, a sort of a common link that people have here in Park City where they tie in their athletic and recreational pursuits, even with their business background. So how do you do it?
That's, you know, it's really interesting. That's one of the greatest things about Park City and why 1-7, our firm, has really taken off here because of the way that we integrate the Park City lifestyle, really, into our financial advising firm. And that's done through ways, as you said, Lynn, through physical wellness and, you know, as what Fausto and I are talking about this morning, also community. We're very, very involved in the community. Actually, we're a big sponsor of KPCW, and also we're a big sponsor of the and community partner with the People's Health Clinic, which also fits into our theme of physical wellness.
And Bruce, 1-7, are you a branch of 1-7, or is 1-7 here in Park City?
So 1-7 is a national firm.
Yeah.
There were four advisors that left Morgan Stanley a year and a half ago. July of 16, we were formed. And we have offices now in Cleveland, Park City. Our main office is in Cleveland and Westchester, New York. And we're opening two new offices in Florida. So
I saw the Chagrin Avenue or something on
Chagrin
the,
Boulevard.
Chagrin,
yes.
Chagrin Boulevard.
Yeah.
And I had a fraternity brother from Chagrin Falls, and I was like, "What?"
Well, I moved here. I moved here 6 years ago from Shaker Heights, Ohio. I was in Shaker Heights for 31 years, and you're exactly right. I mean, Chagrin Falls, such a great little town, just east of Cleveland.
So, having moved to Park City, how do you see all this lining up? You've got Fausto doing the physical part. You're doing the financial part. You're bringing these together as part of the foundation of wellness and health and happiness. And is Park City a component of that, or could you have done it from Shaker Heights, Ohio?
Well, I think because of the way Park City is positioned, as far as everybody moves here for lifestyle, really, and I think our theme of lifestyle along with financial planning for clients really, really works in with the community of Park City. And, you know, back to Fausto, you know, I have to say that I really think that Fausto and I are onto something as far as the combination or the similarities between being a physical wellness coach and being a financial wellness coach.
Yeah, and looking over, you know, what we received, I mean, you've got various steps that lay out, and there are tremendous common themes in both of those.
Correct.
So why don't you kind of lay that out for us, how you're working together?
You know, the similarities really, and Fausto can speak to this as well, is, and Fausto and I actually came up with this after talking during our workouts, and I said, boy, everything you do for me is everything I do for my clients. And it starts with beginning with a plan, all right? And really getting to know the landscape, the lay of the land of your client, and really understanding who your client is. And then setting the goals with your client, and Fausto can speak to that. Getting a long-term plan, and then mapping out a daily routine, and then daily maintenance. And, you know, whether I do it on the financial side, whether it's a financial plan for somebody who wants to buy a home or they want to set goals for retirement or set goals for their child's education, you know, these are all things that we begin with. And I think that, you know, when I look at what Fausto has done for me since July, I mean, we didn't just get right into it. He actually interviewed me before I actually worked with them.
So what does that look like, Fausto? What's an interview that you do for your clients when you're about to set up a program?
So pretty much the way this happened, I know Bruce for a while already through some of my clients, and we've been friends, but he decided to, you know, get into top shape. So basically, everything started just like he said. We just working out one morning, and when he first came, I mean, it was kind of hard to do like a simple workout. So I keep telling him, just give yourself three or four weeks, and you will see a huge difference. So basically, when I have a client in front of me, I need to see what they're coming from, a little bit of their background. So I do like analysis, like maybe you play soccer, so I know that you can be a good runner. Maybe you do classes in Orange Theory, like team, right? So maybe he will be willing to, maybe, you know, I start doing a 5K, 10K, and half marathon, and then a marathon, right? So if you think about a marathon runner, they have to complete a minimum of between 16 to 24 weeks to be able to complete a marathon. So just like Bruce say, you don't show up and say, I'm going to do 100 push-ups, and I'm going to do 100 of this, and I'm going to run 10 miles today. You have to, you know, build yourself up. So it's a lot of planning. It's a lot of let's see where you at, and let's go from there. And every 2 or 3 weeks, you increase either the repetitions or the intensity of your workout. So then it's the whole thing. Like, he does the same thing for his clients, and that's how everything started. And then,
so one of the things that Fausto and I worked on when we first started was, what were my goals? All right, you know, what were my goals as far as working with him? Where did I want to be? And, you know, basically I said, I want to be, you know, in tip-top shape to be able to...
He want
to
be 25 again.
I want to be 25 even though I'm almost 60.
That's what we all say when we come to you, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I just want to be in the best shape of my life.
Yeah.
That's really my goal. And I think that's the goal of a lot of people who live here in Park City.
And so, do you think that it's because people who live here in Park City have experienced setting goals through their physical fitness? They've experienced setting goals, coming up with a plan, getting the lay of the land in other aspects of their lives. And then you're saying, well, if you can do it here, here, and here, you should be doing it over here in the financial realm.
Correct. And I remember, there's also a lot of successful people that have moved here to Park City over the years. So I think what we've seen is that you can only be successful in life if you set goals. And I, you know, obviously the people that have been successful that have moved here, you know, obviously have other goals in their life. So setting goals, whether it's in financial, you know, whether it's in your workplace or whether it's in your career or whether it's in financial planning or retirement or workout, I think that setting goals is really, really important. Now, there is one thing. I want to bring up this article also. Lynn, we still okay? Time-wise?
Just a minute left.
Okay. I want to bring up this article because this really, it's called The 9 Environments That Make Up Your Life, all right? This actually speaks very much to what Fausto and I are talking about. And Lynn, I'll leave this with you, and you can give it to any of the listeners who want to call in if they want to have this. This was actually written a couple weeks ago on a blog called The Mission. And basically, it talks about the 9 environments that make up your life, which is very much along the lines of what 1-7 does. But it's self, spiritual, relationships, network, financial, physical, nature, and body. And that makes up the and the details that are in this article really speak to everything that our firm is about.
Excellent. So, Bruce Greenwald, the 1-7 Group, and Fausto Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Mountain
Line.
Thanks,
Lynn. Thank you for having us. Thanks, Tim.
And stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about, oh no, Heartbreak Ridge. It's a high pressure system. When we return, we'll be talking with atmospheric scientists.
Park City is the most interesting town in the world. Our transit is electrified. We do not celebrate Labor Day, and we obviously believe in the poop fairy. We don't always listen to radio, but when we do, we prefer KPCW. Stay tuned, my friend. Like KPCW, the Summit Land Conservancy is a Park City-based nonprofit organization. WeSaveLand.org.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Tim Henney. Well, Jim Steinberg is a professor of atmospheric scientists at the University of Utah. He's also the author of Secrets of the Greatest Snow on Earth. He also happens to have a blog. It's called, are you ready for this? Wasatch Weather Weenies. I like it. However, in a recent blog, he talked about something called Heartbreak Ridge. Heartbreak Ridge is not a physical location in the Wasatch. Heartbreak Ridge is a thing. It's a high-pressure weather system that could mean dry air for the Wasatch. And he's going to tell us just exactly what he believes that may mean. Professor Jim Steinberg, welcome to the mountain.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So tell us a little bit, how long have you been blogging Wasatch Weather Weenies?
Oh, I started Wasatch Weather Weenies in 2010, I believe it was. So for that really great 2010-11 winter that everybody remembers.
Yes, we remember that one, and we remember last winter, Jim. So tell us what we may have in store for this winter.
Yeah, well, the news right now isn't good. We obviously have had a pretty poor start to the ski season. And, you know, you mentioned Heartbreak Ridge. We have this just a ginormous bubble of high pressure that's setting up over western United States and a lot of western North America, even parts of Canada. It's what meteorologists would call a blocking pattern. Tends to be to move very slowly, and it could be around for quite a while. Right now, none of our computer models are producing any precipitation of significance over Utah for the next 10 days.
Jim, what's a one blue tarski?
Yeah, one blue tarski. So if everybody remembers John Belushi's character in Animal House, who eventually became, of course, Senator Blutarski. But his grade point average was 0.0, so I was jokingly saying that our forecast for precipitation was a Blutarski because we have a 0.0 for the next 10 days.
This is not good. And reading some of your comments, you draw a comparison between what is potentially setting up, and of course we can't say that definitively if this is what we're going to have, but you take it back to a season in the 1970s where Alta reported 30.5 inches of snow for the season. Am I correct about that?
No, not for the season. That would have been November and December. So
okay, well,
76-77 was probably, you know, one of the poorest seasons that we've ever had here in Utah, at least in modern times, for snowfall, and it was a pattern that's fairly similar to what we have had and is really setting up for the next 10 days. So we've had a bad start to the ski season. We haven't had storms able to get into the western United States, and right now the pattern, if anything, is shifting to the worse with an incredibly strong high-pressure system.
So, Jim, as an atmospheric scientist at the University of Utah, you know, we look at these, especially it seems to me, and I'm no expert,
Wait a minute.
We play some experts sometimes on the radio. But it seems like these high-pressure systems are particularly difficult to sort of have move through and end once we're set up in that way. Is that right? Is high pressure harder to break than a low pressure?
The pattern we're getting into, even though of this strength, is a little uncommon. But we do see high pressure systems form, and they're kind of you get into a pattern where the jet stream just wants to be where it is. And it's not like we're going to have just one high pressure system over the next 10 days. What we have is a pattern in which the high will weaken a little bit, and then it gets reinforced, and then it weakens and it gets reinforced. And that goes through that cycle about three times over the next 10 days, but it never weakens enough to let a system come through. So we're just kind of locked in. It doesn't want to go anywhere.
So is Heartbreak Ridge something that you coined, or is it a well-known pattern?
No, there's no official name for that. It's just me being creative with the blog. It's a Heartbreak Ridge for me. I'm a big skier like everybody else. I live in Utah to ski natural snow, not to ski on man-made, and it's just kind of a heartbreaker right now to have the season starting out like this.
And there's absolutely nothing that any of us can do about it except embrace our grief, live into it.
Yeah, I mean,
ride our bikes.
Yeah, ride bikes. go for walks. I mean, at least you're up in Park City. Down here in Salt Lake City, I think we're going to see the pollution building pretty much this week, and it could be quite bad by the time we get into the weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because we're already seeing in the weather reports we get from the ski areas an inversion even here in Park City. It's warmer up top than it is down bottom.
Yeah, the inversion's already formed. The good news here in Salt Lake is it's still above the valley floor a little bit, so we're mixing through a somewhat deep layer, but that's going to, after tomorrow, it's going to lower, and we're going to have an increasingly shallow layer, which we're mixing all the pollution and stuff. So I think we'll probably maybe make it through this week in the moderate category, and then after this work week, and then after that, it could be much worse.
Jim, can you take us through the inversion in terms of why it happens in the winter more so than it does the summer? We know that it has to do with the cold temperature, but
yep.
give us the rundown.
It really has to do with the lack of sunlight, lack of energy from the sun, because the days are short and the sun is at such a low angle, it doesn't provide very much energy. So what happens here in the wintertime is after a cold front comes through, we had a strong cold frontal passage on Sunday, the cold air moves in, and then when a high pressure builds in, the temperatures warm aloft, but they don't warm at the surface because the sun can't heat the air enough, that cold air enough to warm it up. In the summertime, when a cold front goes through, it's not a problem. The sun comes out, and there's a lot of energy from the sun, and it causes the atmosphere to mix really well. But this time of year, we just don't have the ability to do that.
So even when there isn't a low-pressure system coming through, creating wind to clean out, scour the inversion, in the summer we get that normal mixing where you get the canyon winds up and down in the morning, in the afternoon they switch directions, and that's kind of a normal mixing because the sun is doing its thing and not being
blocked. Yeah, it's kind of like when you heat water on the stove. You know, you heat it from the bottom, but you can see when the bubbles get going, it's mixing through the entire depth of the pot. In the summertime, we're mixing through a really deep layer if the sun is out most days, you know, and so any pollution we have gets dispersed very quickly. It's not an issue. But in the wintertime, it's a lid. The inversion is just a lid. It prevents it from the pollution from mixing, and the sun's not strong enough to burn off the cold air that's below the inversion.
Are you concerned about the consequences of all the smoke in the air from the fires in California? I mean, I couldn't help think about that the other day with the Ventura winds.
Yeah, that won't be an issue for Utah right now. With the Santa Ana winds, the flow is offshore there. It's not going to be an issue coming back to here. So we don't have anything to worry about for that. Certainly the Californians, it's a terrible situation there again. And hopefully they can get things under control quickly. But this is a pattern where they are going to see Santa Ana events like this. Maybe not continuously, but it's going to pulsate, but they're going to have Santa Ana conditions from time to time over the next 10 days, although it might be the worst now that it's going to be.
So the Santa Ana winds in California are linked to this high-pressure ridge that's over the Intermountain area.
Yeah, it's all one big system. It's just having different impacts depending on where you are in the western U.S. And, you know, our grief over snow, everybody in the western United States has the same problem, and even parts of western Canada. But the western United States is not going to see any appreciable snow really anywhere over the next 10 days. Colorado might get a brush by and maybe get a little bit of snow, but that would be about it.
Wow. If you're just joining us, our guest is Jim Steinberg. He is a professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Utah. He's also the author of The Secrets of the Greatest Snow on Earth. And, you know, I just wanted to ask you, Jim, you came out with this book, The Secrets of the Greatest Snow on Earth, in about 2014. I remember that we spoke to you at that point. And I believe you originally published that book back in maybe 1988. And I'm wondering, you know, what were the differences in that time? And then if you were to write that book again in, say, 2018, you know, would we see... you know, what kinds of differences would we see facing us with in your reporting in this book?
Right. So the book came out in 2014. It's a first edition. So it's not, there was never a book in 1988.
But
there was a book that Ed LaChapelle, who was a famous avalanche researcher, wrote called Secrets of the Snow, which is a nice book to pick up if you're into backcountry travel and that sort of thing. I've just got a slightly different title there.
Okay.
But the main thing in the book that's changed would be, you know, the chapters that would need updating are probably those that are related to forecasting and global warming. I don't think they would change a lot. If you pick up the book today, it's still going to be very relevant. But the global warming, we've learned more over the last, you know, I wrote that book really in 2013. We have four more years down the road. We've had two, you know, 2016 was a record warm year. We've had tremendous warmth, so I probably would be even a little more morose than I was writing that chapter originally about where we're headed right now. Certainly, in the long run, we're looking at a much warmer planet than we're on today.
It seems as though there's always advances in technology in terms of satellite imagery, and NASA's always launching one thing or another to better view extreme weather patterns and things like that. And I'm wondering if you're able to, you know, how that changes in your forecasting and what you do as an atmospheric scientist.
Yeah, there was one big advance this year as the government's launched a new satellite. It's called GOES-16. We've never had satellite imagery for weather forecasting with this incredible detail and frequency before. So we can see things we've never been able to see before. We can get scans, I think, every 30 seconds or something like this. It's pretty incredible. It's really a revolutionary product. So that was launched. Right now it's being moved. The satellite, they're moving where it's going to sit over the Earth, over the United States. And once it gets in place, it's going to be there all the time, hopefully for several years. So that's an example. The other thing that's changing all the time is our computer models. And the computer models really are the backbone that we, you know, for weather forecasting. And these models get better every year. They're constantly undergoing revision, improvements, and testing. And those get better all the time. And we've got, you know, we should see some new models coming out of the National Weather Service in the next couple of years that are going to improve weather forecasting quite a bit.
And Jim, I'm looking at a picture on your blog, and it's got you, I think it's you hanging onto the back end of a truck with a big radar on top of it, and it says the DOE 7 departed University of Utah campus and began its trip home to Boulder this morning. What happened there? What's that truck with the radar?
Yeah. Well, DOW, D-O-W, that stands for Doppler on Wheel. So that's a mobile radar that's on a truck. And these things are used primarily for tornado chasing in the Midwest to try to understand how tornadoes form. But we use them here to understand winter storms in Utah. So We National Science Foundation sponsored a visit of the Doppler on Wheels to Utah. It's been here for the past month. My students have been using it, and we had some lousy weather, but we did have some storms, and we got some really great data. The storm from Sunday night and Monday morning, we really got phenomenal data for. So we've had a lot of fun doing what I call storm chasing Utah style, which means looking at winter storms.
So you said a moment ago you might be a little morose on certain aspects if you were to write the book that you wrote 4 years ago, because you've got additional data. We've gone further down the path. We know, understand things better. I'm just wondering how you deal with what you know and learn and would take us down a path that has dire consequences, and then reconcile that with the fact that you're working every day as a professor with students at the University of Utah. There must be some sort of balance that helps.
Well, I teach mostly weather classes, not climate classes, and weather's great. I mean, we don't have all the political baggage with weather, and almost everybody's interested in weather. I always am amazed at the difference between weather and climate, because I work in both areas. You know, there's no political connotations. Almost everybody's interested in it. But climate change, boy, all of a sudden, then you get a lot of different opinions because it has big political ramifications, I would suppose. So my moroseness is more, or maybe pessimism might be a better word, about the future. Being a skier and being a lover of snow, during my lifetime, I think we'll see continued warming, but it won't be totally transformative. But when I think about my kids' lifetime, and eventually my grandkids' lifetime, we talk about the end of the 21st century, we're talking about a really dramatic change in the climate of Utah and the world.
And what do you think about snow level, you know, in Park City, for example? And what do you see as the biggest challenges? You know, we've had the Save Our Snow group talking about rising snow levels in Park City. What's your prediction for the base here at about 7,000 feet, 6,800?
My usual comment is that when we start thinking about, say, 5, 10, or 15 years from now, a lot's going to depend on just the whims of the jet stream. You know, if we get into a cold pattern, we're going to have a good ski seasons again. So when we're thinking long term, though, the warming trend, you know, the ups and downs that we have for weather, most people have noticed here in Utah, for example, that we don't get many super cold days anymore. Those have kind of disappeared. We definitely have a bias towards warmer temperatures. Utah has not had a year-long average temperature above the 20th century average since 1993, that you can't get that without a warming climate. So what's going to happen over time, and we go forward to the 21st century, is a little bit of what you saw this year, rain at the base during the shoulder season, November, those areas, instead of snow some. And we're going to see less snow, a greater fraction of wintertime precipitation falling as rain instead of snow. That'll be more dramatic at the base of Park City, say, than at the summit. The summit, for example, will continue to see most of the precipitation fall as snow probably for some time. But the lower elevations, that's where the real vulnerability is over, say, the next 20 or 30 years and then beyond.
Wow. Okay. Time enough for just one final, very short, small secret, one of your secrets. Where do you find the best snow in Utah?
Oh, well, I'll give a secret there. I'll tell you where the snowiest place is in Utah for its elevation, and that's actually Ben Lomond Peak up by Ogden. A lot of people think Alta is the snowiest place in Utah, but if you go to Ben Lomond at the same elevation, say, as in Little Cottonwood, it actually snows more. So that's the snowiest place for you in Utah, pound for pound, if you want to do a boxing analogy, as I like to put it.
Excellent. All right, Jim Steinberg, atmospheric scientist. And how do we find your blog, Wasatch Weather Weenies?
Just Google that, and you should be able to get to it.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was interesting. And a little, let's use the word again, morose.
Depressing. But it's not all bad news.
That's right. It's KPCW Park City.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.